And it didn't seem to bother us any, you know, we had our lessons, we went, I have no idea what kind of hours we were there, if it was like 8 to 3 or 9 to 4, I don't know what it was.
Right.
But all the time we were in school, we were learning. We were there writing, we were reading. When she was teaching one grade in the front of the room, then we had our assignments that we were doing in the back of the room. And we could always listen, like if she had, say, if I was in second grade and she had a fourth grade reading class going on in the front of the room, I would be listening to see, you know, what the fourth graders were saying.
She, meaning your mother.
My mother, because she was the school teacher. And in a way, it was kind of nice because we felt real important if we picked up something. Said, hey, we learned this, you know, the fourth graders are doing this. Or we can spell this word, and this is a fourth grade spelling word. And, yeah, it was kind of interesting. Even though we had our own little things we were doing at our seat, we still could hear what was going on with the other classes because it was all handled in one room. Which, I say it wouldn't. It was an advantage in a way and a disadvantage. It was very difficult for the teacher trying to conduct four different classes in one classroom. And but back then, too, the discipline was not a problem. We all sat there. We went to school. There was no yelling, no screaming, no running. It just wasn't done. I don't remember my mother ever. She was a very kind, gentle, soft-spoken person, and I don't think she ever spanked anyone. The most I remember her doing is maybe if someone misbehaved, like a little boy that was talking, and there was one we had, his name was George Pat, I remember, and she would make him sit behind the organ. There was an organ in the schoolroom, and she would play, and we'd have things sometimes to relax during the afternoon. And anyone misbehaving, there was a little stool behind the organ, and they went there and they sat down for a while. And that was all the big discipline I remember, but it just wasn't a problem. They just weren't. And two, of course, in this town, it was a very, very working class people. Most of them were on the same. We all lived in board houses. Everything in the little town was owned by the coal mining company. Everything was rented. People didn't own their own house there. You rented from the coal mining company. The store, one store in the town, it was also owned by the coal company. They set the prices and everybody had a running bill there. You just went and sent the children. We got our bread or milk or eggs, and they put on the bill at the end of the month. One of the parents had to go in, you know, and pay the store bill. And everything was, it just went. There was no crime in the little town. Anybody could, you know, could walk up and down the street whenever you wanted to. You could go out at night, but there was nothing much to do, so you didn't go out at night a whole lot because there was nothing there except the store and the post office and the townspeople and the church, and that was it. There wasn't even a tavern. There was not a place. If the men wanted to drink, they had to go to the neighboring town.
How did you get from this little bitty town of Pennsylvania to this big city of Oxford?
Oh, my, yes.
How old are you exactly?
I was born in 38.
1938. That would make you 56?
57.
57. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. But it was, it was an experience growing up, and I think everyone should have. Of course, we didn't have indoor bathrooms in our house in the coal mining town. We didn't have running water inside. And I say, even though we didn't have extracurricular activities in the school, nobody was ever bored. Everybody was, the children, we'd always play. We had big softball games going. We had a softball and a bat. We had trouble finding a bat sometimes, but we'd come up with something. We'd play kick the can a lot. If we didn't have a ball, we'd just use a can. We'd kick it and kind of run bases. And we did a lot of things in the community. The children would gang to, you know, do things together, but they'd be, there were never adult supervision with us. We'd just go out and play. We'd go to the creek or swim. And I don't remember adults being around very much, but there might be older children. Maybe there was, you know, some 10-year-olds, and there were some 15, 16-year-olds that sort of kept track of the little ones while we were doing these activities. But we stayed there, but mainly transferring down here to Oxford, I guess, let's see. Well, there's a lot in between. I just kind of skim in between because it's quite a lot between there, between the little bitty town, and from there, of course, I went to college. I started teaching in Levittown. Then I sort of just got real tired of teaching. I didn't like the community that well. It was just too very, very stressful, not just in the school it was stressful, but it was even in, going in a restaurant at night, it was just, you sort of took your life in your hands. I was in a diner one night when a motorcycle, it was back in the days like the motorcycle, I don't know, the movie Grease, maybe see the motorcycle gangs.
And this is Levittown.
Yes, Levittown, Pennsylvania, which is kind of just outside of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a lot, there was a lot of violence then. And I'm sure there's very much more so there now in that same area, but I was in a diner and a motorcycle gang came in and just locked the doors and wouldn't let anybody in, wouldn't let anybody out, terrorized the waitresses, terrorized the customers, and it was that kind of a town, you know. It's just
what?
Well, it finally, as it turned out, the dishwasher, there was a boy there, that this was before the days of automatic dishwashers in restaurants, and they had just people, kids usually wash dishes. And the dishwasher saw the motorcycles coming, and he went out the back door before they actually got in, and he went for help. He ran to a phone, and he called the police, but it took him a while because the diner was not in a busy section, and I don't know, by the time he got to where he's going, the gang that took over the diner had already beaten up a couple of the older men that were in the diner, say in their 40s, 50s, had already terrorized waitresses, young waitresses, and that sort of thing before the police came. But then we heard the police whistles, and they heard that. They all got in their little motorcycles and took off before the police came.
Mm-hmm.
But it was that kind of a place. So I just, after 6 years, I left there. I stayed there 6 years, and that was enough. So I left Levittown, and I took a job in Corning, New York State, which is where they make Corning Glass. There's a big Corning Glass factory there. And it was about, oh, maybe an hour and a half from my hometown, too, where my parents lived, which was nice. So I could see my mother, my father a little more often. Mm-hmm. And in the meanwhile, of course, we left the town of Antrim. We all left there when I was probably in ninth grade and went to we're still in the same area, went to another, but the next largest town, which was Wellsville, and my mother taught there, and she stayed in that system until she retired, making a total of 37 years that she taught school.
Mm-hmm.
But I moved to Corning, and that was pretty nice. I didn't really mind that too much. It was a little smaller. It was a smaller town. It was not as rough. I moved down to 7th and 8th grade, my teaching, before I was teaching high school in Levittown. And I moved to 7th and 8th grade, which made it a little bit better teaching situation. And the students there were a little easier to manage, too, I think mainly because it wasn't such a large school and it wasn't such a large community. There was a little more parent-student contact. There was a little more community involvement with the school. And I think that helped, too. But I don't know. I just wasn't really too happy, even with teaching at that point. So my sister happened to be, she'd been in Italy for 3 years with overseas teaching. She taught school also. But she taught in Italy, so she was coming back to the States, and she was married then, and she got stationed in, she and her husband, in Anniston. So I basically just came down for a visit. And I thought it was such a nice area. I just loved it here. I liked the warm weather. I came in the spring, and the azaleas and magnolias, and everything was just really pretty, and I thought, gee, this would be a nice place. And at that point, I was single and free. I had no big involvements with anybody, so I thought, why not? I always kind of like to try new things, so I said, I'll try this. If I don't like it,
okay.
I've got my car, my dog, my little bank account. I'll just leave, you know, try something else.
And I take it you like it.
I came down here, and I did. I liked it real well.
Okay.
And then, of course, I met my husband. That's probably one reason I stayed here so long. I met him when probably the first week I came to, not the first week in Alabama, because I stayed with my sister a while until I got my job. But after I got my job and I moved into a little rental house in Blue Mountain, mm-hmm. and he worked for the water department, so I met him probably the first week I was into my new house. So
mm-hmm.
that sort of changed things. And then I started seeing him after that. Then we got married, so I've been here many, many years now.
How many years?
Probably, I know I've been here 21 because Chris is 21, so that would have been 21, something. Probably about 26 years.
26 years. Okay, let's go back to your, we talked a little bit about your childhood. How long was it about? I don't know what you said.
Oh, I said I'm 30. So it's in 25 minutes.
Okay. Let's take it a second. You said it was a pretty rough at Levittown. Just tell me some of your experiences in the classroom as a teacher.
In the classroom, it was really pretty horrible. I had, even the girls were rough. It was just a sort of, and they say, you know, kids are so bad now.
Now what year was
but,
this?
This was I started teaching in 59.
Mm-hmm.
I graduated from, and that was my first job, so it would have been 59.
Okay.
Through about 65, I was there. And they were, I mean, I had children in my class. This was high school, I call it. But they would think absolutely nothing of just swearing in class, you know, like, I'm not going to do this GD homework, you know, just say it out, you know, to a teacher. It was this kind. It wasn't at all unusual. They had very, you know, not only foul language they used in the hallway, in the classroom, to the teacher. They didn't seem to have, I don't know, maybe respect for their teachers. I don't know, the teachers had, especially the women, now some of them, they had the rule that you could not hit a child. This was big back then in the 60s. You couldn't strike a child, you couldn't spank them, you couldn't do anything, and you could discipline them too much. They could be suspended, but the principals usually were very, you know, slow to actually just suspend. We had a very lenient principal in the school where I was. And you could send a child to the office, they'd be right back in your room, say, the next day. The most frightening incidents I remember happening when I was teaching was, well, the first week I was there, I had one rather frightening one. I was working late after school and doing bulletin boards, and I didn't realize that everybody left the building except me and a few of the detention hall hoodlums, we used to call them, because they were always in detention hall. And I was just sitting there all by myself, kind of trying to get my lesson plans done for the next day and trying to get my bulletin boards, and a boy walked in. He was a student. I didn't know him. He wasn't in any of my classes, but my room was kind of down at the end of a wing, and he just walked in, sat down, plopped down, and I was probably 21. I started teaching at 21, and I was always very small. I was like, you know, 5 foot, didn't weigh 100 pounds, and young looking. I'm sure I probably looked like a 16-year-old when I was a 21-year-old, mainly because of my size. I was too small. But he walked in and sat down, and of course he was very large too, you know, like 6 foot, and he probably looked extremely bigger to me. And he just started, you know, visiting a little, and I started getting a little nervous, and then he started getting a little bit more. I don't remember the conversation, but it was the fact that, you know, you and I are the only ones left here in the building, and, you know, I can do whatever I want to. And I said, well, you know, there's a phone. We did have phones in intercom. And I said, there's a phone right over there on the wall. You know, I'll have to do, there'll be someone in the office. And he just looked at me and he said, what makes you think you can make it to the phone? And that was a little frightening.
Mm-hmm.
As it turned out, he was all right. I think he was just trying to scare me. And I just kind of sat there at my desk, and he was sort of sitting inside. And I said, well, I'm sure if I need you to make it to the phone, you know, I can get there. And he stayed for a little bit, and then he just sort of walked out, and I don't even know where he came from or what class. I just knew he was a student there, but that was the last time I ever stayed after school. After that, I was gone. As soon as the bus pulled out, I was in my car and out of there. And the other frightening, I was in a homeroom. This happened in a homeroom, and I had two of the boys started to fight. I mean, they were physically fighting in my homeroom. They started first with a little cursing, swearing, yelling, screaming at each other, and then the next step, they were up in the aisle, and one of them pulled out a switchblade. And he went after the other one. He was standing there. It was just like this moment was frozen, and all I can remember about, I thought, oh my gosh, you know, somebody's going to get killed in this room today. And he had the switchblade out in his hand, and I kind of just, at that point, and I'd already called the office, and I sent for office help, but it, and say, when these things happen, it's like within seconds, you know, you don't have minutes for somebody to come, it's just there. And I step in between them, and I just started trying to calm them, you know, and say, hey, take it easy, you know, guys, let's not get excited here, let's talk about it, let's think about it. And in the process, because there again, I was very small, and these were seniors I was dealing with, and one of them sort of stepped back, and his elbow hit me in the head, so just, you know, as a reflex.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, that broke up their fight, because they were two boys that really, they were okay usually in homeroom. They liked me okay. They never gave me any trouble. They didn't have anything against me as a teacher. They were they were okay.
Hold that thought.